This is the Tripartisan Podcast with Ben Swain, James Henderson, and David Staley. Get ready for the latest football and basketball news and opinions on Duke, NC State, and Carolina with our insiders. Now, here's the Tripartisan Podcast.
It is Monday night here in the Triangle, and with the hurricane on the way, we're hoping everyone still has power to listen to the show on Thursday when it publishes. We are the Tripartisans of WRELSportsFan.com. I am Ben Swain, and I'm here once again with Dave Staley covering the Tar Heels and James Henderson covering the Wolfpack. Guys, we're going to start with the Blue Devils tonight, though. So Duke goes on the road, gets a big-time, pretty comfortable win against Northwestern, and I'm ready to bail on the season right now because All-American cornerback Mark Gilbert is out for the year. Daniel Jones had shoulder surgery, and he's out indefinitely. Duke's 2-0, guys. Talk me off the ledge. Why shouldn't I just quit on the season right now?
Oh, man. I don't know if I've ever heard somebody try to bail on their team when they were 2-0.
Done. Two big wins, and I'm done.
I feel like we should reverse our roles here. I mean, if someone's going to bail on the season, it should probably be the Carolina guy right now. I mean, you can still be bowl eligible. You still get to play Carolina later this year, so you've got another W. And didn't, like, you sat through winless seasons for decades, right?
Yeah, it's really funny. You know, Duke goes up to Northwestern with, first of all, they don't have Jeremy McDuffie, so they're already down a cornerback. They're down a safety. Aaron Young, who had 100 yards and a touchdown in the first game, they're without him, so they're already shorthanded. Go and play, you know, the team that they have to beat. It's kind of like the measuring stick of Duke in terms of program success, and they just kind of coast to a win. And seriously, all feels lost in Durham because you go from this high of, hey, this team can do something special, to, you know, here we go again with bad luck. It's just, you're exactly right, Dave. It's a weird feeling because, you know, Duke should be fortunate to even have two wins at all. But it's just a disappointing kind of empty, hollow feeling right now. It's very strange.
Let me talk you off the ledge. I'm looking at this schedule right now for Duke, and we've done this show for a year now, and I'm sure I've told you multiple times, Ben, I think David Cutcliffe is a great coach, and I'm sure you probably feel the same way. I think he's really good, and when I look at this schedule, I mean, you have Baylor coming up, North Carolina Central, Georgia Tech. You know, I'm saying this because I think Duke's defense has shot. They look good, I thought, at Northwestern. I'm sure you'll probably comment on that a little bit here in a minute. But Virginia, Pittsburgh, North Carolina, I think you have – I mean, I don't know what the expectations were coming into the year, but I can see you still get it, having a winning season with this. Now, again, I don't know what your expectations were, you know. But when I look at this schedule, I think there's a lot of winnable games left.
Yeah, and you nailed it. Full disclosure, it was a trick question. It's the topic of my columns coming out this week. Is should Duke fans bail on the season? And you nailed it, James. Basically, the crux of my conversation is the defense is playing well. A schedule that looked frightening going into the season, once we've gotten to see some of these teams play over the first two weekends, is not that frightening. I think a lot of folks thought 6-6, 7-5 was kind of a reasonable expectation for Duke heading into the season with that schedule. And now sitting at 2-0, still with a good chance to beat Baylor, who's played if not the easiest schedule, one of the most easiest schedules in the NCAA to this point. They got a chance to win that game on the road and be 3-0. Then they got NC Central. And then you kind of get into the meat of the schedule where some losses will come in for sure. But that 6-6, 7-5 is still there. And really a lot of it has to do with Miami not looking as good as we thought they would look this year. Georgia Tech had a loss this weekend. Virginia looks bad. We'll get to the Tar Heels here in a moment. It's still all there for them to play. But I want to throw one thing back to Dave, because what I keep going back to with this Duke team right now is something that has to do with UNC basketball. Hear me out, Dave. What your feedback on this?
Okay.
What happens in the UNC fan base anytime the Tar Heels lose like the first game of the basketball season? What is the one thing that all fans fall back on as, okay, here we go, it's going to be a good year? You know what I'm talking about?
When there's an injury, we fall back on it's going to be a good year. Oh, Santa Clara.
Exactly. Exactly. Every time UNC has like a point guard out for the beginning of the year, or they have that early season loss, it always falls back to, man, remember when we lost to Santa Clara first game of the season, and it was Felton that was out, right? Was that the yep. Raymond Felton?
Yeah.
Okay, so Felton was out, go on the road, lose to Santa Clara. Tar Heels go on to win the national championship this year. Do you guys know what happened the last time Duke started 2-0, starting quarterback got hurt in the second game of the season? It was 2013. Brandon Kinnett fills in for Anthony Boone. Duke goes to 2-2, but then wins the last 8 games of the year to finish the season 10-2 in Coastal Champs. So that's what Duke needs to fall back on right now, is the Raymond Felton principle of, in order for Duke to win the Coastal Championship, they had to have Daniel Jones go down in the second game, and it happened. They're going to lose a couple games now, but then he's going to come back, and Duke's going to go on a tear to finish the season. It's a done deal thanks to Raymond Felton. So that's my take, is Raymond Felton is going to carry Duke football to a Coastal Championship this year, and you heard it here first.
Santa Clara is certainly the most fondly remembered loss in Carolina basketball history.
It has to be, right?
I can't think of another one where you're like, oh, yeah, that was a good loss. That was fun.
Does State have one of those, James? It's kind of like the safety blanket for NC State fans.
Well, come on, Ben. I mean, is that a trick question?
No, State's the opposite, right? Where it's God, here we go again. But
trying to think back to a title. So, I mean, you're killing me here. I can't do it. I can't think of it. I guess I can go watch Survive and Advance again and maybe find 4 or 5.
All right.
So far, you've tried to make James think of a title for NC State, and you've had us both say good things about Duke football.
So I've won the episode.
But hey, Ben, before we get off Duke, can you tell me just thoughts on the replacement? I think, Jones, or didn't he take over in a similar situation? Was it due to injury, not a lot of expectation on him, and he performed well? Is that accurate? Is that right?
He started the year as a starting quarterback. So he didn't come in as a replacement for an injured guy. But he started the year when Thomas Cirque tore his Achilles tendon before the season started.
Gotcha. Okay.
Coming into that season, there was a lot of talk already, a lot like Elliott and UNC, where he was going to be the guy to start, and then something happened that just made that materialize. So you're not remembering it correctly, but he was going to be the guy coming into that season, even though Thomas Cirque was still on the roster. In terms of his backup, Quentin Harris came in for him up at Northwestern and didn't do much. Again, Duke's up 21-7 at the time, so he was just kind of like running out the clock, basically. He's a good running quarterback. We haven't seen him throw the ball much. One thing that's kind of cool that could happen this year, I don't think it's going to, just because of size and physicality, Duke's true freshman quarterback, Gunnar Holmberg, out of Wake Forest, he's a really good quarterback. And he's not even listed on the depth chart because he's going to redshirt this year. He can play 4 games this season and not lose that eligibility. So that is an option. I don't think we're going to see it again because he is, you know, pretty small and needed to use this season for strength. I don't think there's any need to throw him in there and get him injured as well and kind of stunt his growth down the road, because he's going to be the guy moving forward. But he's a possibility. And then they've got Chris Katrinick is another guy that's on the roster. That was kind of the replacement that they got when Chaz Surratt went to UNC instead of Duke. They went out and got Katrinick really the next day to fill that void. So they kind of like him, but he, you know, again, none of them are Daniel Jones. So it's going to be a big step back, which might be good news for your fantasy team, because they should be, you know, giving the ball to Britton Brown quite a bit.
Man, I saw a lot of Deion Jackson this weekend.
And he's been kind of good. So I wouldn't say that he's taken over that, you know, first running back duty, from Britton Brown, but You know, they needed him in the game against Northwestern, and maybe it comes down to something where he's just a better blocking back. You know, if he's going to pick up a blitzing linebacker better than Britton Brown is, he might get some more playing time. But if Duke's going to run the ball more than pass it, I think you'll see Britton in there more often than not.
Gotcha.
That would be my take, at least. But that's really it. There's just not much of Duke. It's kind of like a ho-hum 2-0 start, which, as Dave alluded to, is very strange territory for Duke to feel. But that's where they are. Let's go to you now, James. State coast to an easy win against Georgia State, and hopefully has a big matchup with West Virginia this weekend as kind of the marquee matchup of the weekend. What's the word in Raleigh right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a wait and see approach. You know, I think everybody, that's probably the case with all of the teams. I think Duke might, are they on the road, I believe? Is that right?
Yeah, Duke's at Baylor.
Yeah, and I think Carolina actually has their first home game, if I remember right. So both of us seem to be waiting. And I mean, I think at State, it's just kind of trying to figure out how to get this game played. I think both teams want to play it because of the quarterback situation at both schools. I mean, Will Grier and Ryan Finley are considered two of the top, you know, quarterbacks in the country. And I think that's a marquee showing for both guys and both programs, really. And I know they've been checking bye weeks and maybe looking to do a potential situation like you saw last year at Florida State, where if neither team made their won their division and they had that open weekend at the end of the year, maybe you just move it to there as a just in case situation. But personally, I just don't see any way NC State's going to play this game this year after doing the Notre Dame game 2 years ago. I think looking back, I think they didn't like how they turned out. I mean, it was a dangerous situation when you look back on it. And this year, it just seems like with the way this storm is trending, it's going to be even more dangerous and catastrophic. And I know one aspect a lot of people don't think about is just being able to have enough personnel there from a police medical standpoint to cover the game. You know, I mean, where are those going to be at in a situation like that? So I just think looking on it, it's going to be hard to have this game played this week. But I guess we'll wait and see and kind of see how the storm progresses.
Did anything of interest come out of that Georgia State game, or is everyone just really looking forward to the next game at this point?
Still concerned with the running game at NC State. I know a lot of fans are. I mean, that kind of dominated Dave Doeren's press conference this week. They were not able to average over 4 yards per carry, I don't believe, against Georgia State. If they did, it was because they hit one late when the game was over. But really struggled running the football, and that's been kind of a thing they've done well in the past, the last couple of years. And they feel comfortable, I think, with their running backs. I think it's an offensive line tight end situation. And I think they're concerned because, you know, when you play the tougher teams coming up on your schedule, you're not going to be able to probably just drop back and pass every play. You're going to have to be able to establish a running game. And I really think that was something they wanted to have against West Virginia, because last year West Virginia was atrocious stopping the run, really struggled with it. And I think State's goal probably going into that game was to be able to run the football and keep Grier and that offense on the sidelines, and not being able to run it is going to be an issue, because I think that's going to allow you to get into a shootout with them. And that's something you probably don't want to do. I mean, you look at what they've done so far. I mean, they've been shredded. They've shredded their first two opponents. They went and whipped Tennessee the first week. And so I think that's a game where State wishes they had a running game. And I think that's a concern for them right now, is just the fact that if you can't run on Georgia State or James Madison, what are you going to do with these teams going forward?
I'm going to steal something from Dave that he had in the group text this week, asking you about Gillespie. We talked about Duke's kind of disappointing wide receiver core. Is Gillespie been like a little bit of a disappointment with what he came in terms of his pedigree?
You know, I mean, for me, he hasn't, because I didn't have huge expectations for him in terms of being a dynamic running back. I think Reggie Gillespie is one of these guys where he's going to get you what you block. And you know what I mean by that. You've seen running backs that if you open a hole, he's going to get you the yardage. And once he gets into the secondary, he can break some tackles and different things like that. But he's not one of these dynamic running backs NC State's had the last 2 years. You know, you look at Nyheim Hines or Jalen Samuels or Matt Days. I mean, these are guys who can make defenders miss in the hole and create big plays. He's not going to get that. And so if your line is struggling, or if your tight ends and fullbacks and all these guys are struggling blocking, he's going to struggle, because he's not the type of guy who's going to be able to create big gains. So I think on the surface, definitely. I mean, I think when you look at his numbers right now, it's certainly concerning. And really, I believe NC State's hoping one of these other running backs will show something to where they can maybe push him for competition, or even, you know, possibly take over that job. I mean, Ricky Person's been hurt, a four-star recruit out of Heritage. He's actually a former teammate of Gunner, you mentioned. You know, I live in Wake Forest, so I've seen Gunner play a lot. He played at Heritage with Ricky Person, and Ricky's been injured. He didn't play against Georgia State. Trent Penix is a freshman they like from Sanderson here in Raleigh. He actually played. He was the number two guy, and he looked pretty good. And, I mean, I think both of those guys, when healthy, are going to push Reggie, because I do think when your line's struggling, they are the type that can maybe generate some plays because they are a little more explosive, a little more shifty in the hole.
And looking at Penix, that was the source of my text to you of trying to find out, should I drop Gillespie from my fantasy team and pick up Penix? Because it wasn't just his carry. I mean, he had 9 carries and Gillespie only had 11, so they were right there together. But Penix had 3 catches for 66 yards and a touchdown. And I was like, whoa, maybe I should look at this guy.
Yeah, and I think it's just that explosiveness. You know, I mean, I think it's that the opportunity for a big play, Penix or Person is going to give you that. And I think when you're struggling like NC State's been to run the football, you're going to look at those and maybe just saying, hey, let's go with some home run swings. If we can't sustain drives, I mean, I think against Georgia State, there were 2 fourth and ones NC State had, and one they barely converted. I mean, literally, I thought they got a lucky spot, to be honest with you, to even get it. And then the second one, they ran the same play, same running play, and they didn't get it. And I think that was a concern, you know, coming out of that game. But you can't pick up a fourth and one easily against a Georgia State front. You know, what are you going to do when you face a Clemson or I can't say Florida State. I was going to say Florida State, but, you know, I can't mention them. I mean, maybe I may just have to leave it at Clemson this year with the way the league's looking. But I think if you're NC State, you're concerned with that. Just if you can't pick those yards up against Georgia State, what are you going to do? And I think they're looking at all options at this point. That includes other running backs.
Would State take Deion Jackson and Cam Reddish for Finley right now in a trade?
No. And Cam Reddish, maybe. No, I don't think so, man. I think you know how it is, and you started about Duke's quarterback situation. I mean, you got to have a quarterback. I mean, I think Carolina's probably seeing that. I'm sure that'll be something David will talk about here, is a quarterback situation there, because I was able to watch some of that game and saw what all went down with the bringing in the freshman. But, I mean, I think in football you got to have a quarterback. I mean, I think the other positions you can maybe patchwork and make happen, but if you got a guy you're confident in, you feel like you got a shot every week, and I think it's going to take, you know, you pulling it from Dave Dorn's dead hands, taking Finley away at this point.
Well, you mentioned the Tar Heels. So let's go there. I've got one question written down for Dave, and that question is, what in the hell?
Yeah, that's a great question that I don't really have an answer to. I mean, honestly,
you got to look at the tape, right?
I have to look at the tape. You'll have to give me time to review. Yeah, no, I mean, I think when we talked last week, if you had told me that Carolina was going to lose to ECU, I would have said, you know, okay, like, I'm not super surprised. If you had told me they were going to get blown out by ECU, I mean, that just can't happen. I mean, you can't figure out what went wrong. I mean, well, really, I mean, you can't figure out what went right. Just nothing. It's my column this week is about penalties over the course of the Larry Fedora era, even going back to his time at Southern Miss. I'm looking to see how many penalties his teams had. And, you know, I mean, again, you go back to, that's what frustrates you, is the preventable things that happen. I mean, it's 3rd and 22. You get a stop, you get their quarterback to throw the ball away. He runs out of bounds, and then a 5th-year senior hits him 3 steps out of bounds and picks up a personal foul, and they score a touchdown, you know, whatever, 3-4 plays later. So I think that was when they took the lead, or, you know, they went up by, I think it was it 14-13? I don't know. It was still a game at that point, and that was just one of those things that you look back and you say, man, there's a turning point in the game. And those are the types of things you've just got to stop doing, boneheaded stuff. And Fedora doesn't seem to I don't know. Like, I don't know what it is that he's not doing to prevent those things? I mean, is it not disciplining the players enough when something like that happens? I don't know what a typical football coach does to avoid penalties, but they clearly do things that don't seem to be happening in Chapel Hill right now, which is extremely frustrating. So, I mean, I mean, like I said last week, I said if Carolina lost the game, you're talking about, you know, what's going to happen to Fedora now, not at the end of the season. And I mean, I think I would revise that now and say I don't currently think that Fedora is going to be let go in the middle of the season. But I think you look back at this game at the end of the season as the game where he lost the fan base, and barring a miracle, like, this is the game that probably will cost him his job at the end of the season. I just don't see, you know, after thinking about it, I don't really see much benefit in letting him go now. I mean, what good does that do, I guess, short of kind of send a statement of, hey, we're moving in a different direction, but you've still got this season to play. You're not going to hire a coach in the middle of the year. So.
Yeah, we've got the right guy on the phone, because James, you just went through that, right? With Mark Gottfried. What was that like at State? Was that a good thing that it came out at least that they were going to let him go at the end of the year during the season, or would it have been better to wait until the end of the year? What do you think about that?
I actually thought it was a good thing. And again, that's from a media perspective for sure. I mean, I think once it reaches the point, I think, to where you're constantly talking about it and you know it's done. I mean, what's the good in delaying it? I mean, and I get it. You allow him to finish out the job, all these things. But I think you're almost putting a guy through a disservice by just constantly sending him out to these media availabilities, and that's all he's getting asked about. And it had reached that a little bit with Gottfried, to where, you know, his job status was starting to come up. And obviously, as an administration, it allows you to start the search quicker. Maybe you benefit from that. Maybe there's a guy you like who isn't coaching right now, you can get a head start on. So, I mean, I personally think if you realize that's the move to make, make it. Maybe I'm in the minority with that. I don't know. But maybe it's too early with Fedora. I mean, I was going to ask David, do you think – UNC is dealing with some stuff right now with the suspensions and even some injuries. Do you think it's still – too early to say that this season's – I mean, is it too early to say the season's over? I mean, because I think maybe it is.
I mean, I think I would agree with you that let's say we get 4 games before the end of the season. Let's say we get 8 games into the season, and it's clear at that point that Fedora's not going to be the one moving forward. I think at that point it's fine. I think personally the season is probably done. I mean, you've lost two of your lighter games on the schedule to open up the season. It's not going to get any easier. I mean, we've got a game against Western Carolina, but there's not a whole lot of, you know, clear W's on the schedule. But I do think it is too early to categorically say, all right, you know, you're out, and make the call now. And part of that is a few injuries. Part of that is some suspensions, but I would even the suspensions, right? I kind of at some level.
Oh, I agree.
Right. Like, I mean, it's your program. You've had people suspended all the time. Like, can you stop the suspensions, please?
That was actually going to be my next question to you, is like, because you mentioned the penalties, right? The personal fouls, lack of discipline on the field. Can you equate some of that with lack of discipline off of the field as well?
I think you have to. I mean, I think it's the two go hand in hand, and you just see all of the different things that have gone on. I mean, if you look back at the, what year was it that Carolina beat Duke in Wallace Wade and then, you know, vandalized the, locker room. I mean, there's just like all these stupid little incidents that have occurred that are just clearly a lack of discipline, and on the field, off the field, whatever. It's tiring and it's annoying at this point.
David, I do want to ask you, Nathan Elliott. I know, again, I told you I watched the game, and I saw, I think maybe midway through the fourth quarter, they went with one of the freshman quarterbacks. Do you think there's a quarterback controversy there? Do you think they should maybe look at the freshman, or do you think this is something kind of beyond the quarterback position?
I mean, Elliott definitely didn't do himself any favors. He missed a couple of, you know, touchdown balls or balls that could have been touchdowns if he had placed them a little bit better. And I think if you looked at Fortin, I mean, he had to get time. I mean, you go back to the discussion that you were having about, you know, you can play the redshirt freshman or you can play the freshman for four games and still let him have their redshirt. And so I think that was this for Fortin. I mean, you know, he didn't come in and blow anybody's socks off. So it's not like, you know, Carolina came out and started mounting a little comeback and scored a couple touchdowns behind him. I mean, it's not like the ball moved that much better. So there's not this groundswell of support of, all right, well, you've got to bench Elliott. I mean, you had people that were already saying, hey, Elliott's not a top tier quarterback and he shouldn't be the starter. And so, I mean, those people were not silenced on Saturday, but they also don't have a clear rallying cry of somebody else to get behind, because I think when Surratt comes back in game five, I guess, I think at that point, if he can come out and have a good game, that's when people are going to say, all right, well, let's bench Elliott and give Surratt a shot. But until then, I mean, I think Fortin will probably, well, I mean, I highly doubt the game gets played this weekend. So Fortin will probably get some time in the next game after that, which at this juncture, I can't even remember who we play after UCF. But I'm not sure that, I mean, unless he comes out and does something a lot different than what he showed on Saturday against ECU. I mean, he wasn't somebody that you're like, oh, well, we have a bright future. We just need to switch over to him. There's problems beyond just the quarterback position.
But you know, UCF is top 20 team.
Defending champs.
Defending champs. Do you think UNC wants to play this game right now?
Who's UNC? The players?
Let me rephrase that. Does Larry Fedora want this game right now?
I would imagine not. I mean, I don't really know what he wants right now. I mean, the one thing I was thinking was, hey, like, if you do play it in a hurricane, you've at least got a built-in excuse for why attendance is so low, because it was going to be bad anyway. But yeah, I don't think anybody's, especially considering what happened the last time Carolina went out and played in a hurricane. I don't think anybody's saying, oh, well, we'll probably go out and win that one. So yeah, I think Fedora could use a week to lick his wounds and maybe figure out some sort of pivot to his strategy, rather than going out and playing UCF next weekend.
Here's a question, and I think most of it's going to be out of UNC's hands anyway, but in terms of the suspensions, so right now, Surratt is out for two more games, right? And then there's another group that's out for four more games. Do I have that correct? That six was the longest amount?
I think four was the longest amount, and they were spread out over six games.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly how everything was kind of laid out. I mean, Surratt got his all four up front because he was the only quarterback, but then there were other positions where there were multiple people from that position suspended. And so they kind of staggered those. And I think all of them are finished after six games, but no individual player was suspended for more than four.
Okay. So UCF is what it is. It's a, you know, a big non-conference game. That's probably a loss if you put the two teams even on the same field together. But even if they win, it's just like a bragging rights kind of thing. Because I think it's too early to call, but I'm going to say that UNC is out of the college football playoff picture at this point. They could still run the table in the Coastal, right? Like, they could still win the Coastal division. And right now, Surratt, if he is head and shoulders better than Nathan Elliott, is only missing the Pittsburgh game. If UCF doesn't happen, would his suspension not go into the Miami game as well? And now you're talking about two Coastal games that you were without your starting quarterback.
Yeah, that is probably true. I mean, I would have to think that that's how it'd be handled. He would just, you know, miss the first four games, regardless of whether one of the scheduled games got I wouldn't think that if we rescheduled UCF for the end of the season or something, that he would wait until that game to serve.
He'd be out for that game.
Right. So, yeah, I would think that he's going to be gone for the first two conference games. I will say, like, at the beginning of the season, I thought that Pitt was going to be a win. We've just done really well against them over the past several seasons. Even in games that you thought they were the better team, we've wound up coming out ahead. So much like I had zero faith in Carolina winning an opening season game against a Power Five opponent, I didn't have a lot of faith that Pitt was going to be able to figure out a way to beat Carolina. I'm going to revise that now and say that they probably have a pretty decent shot. But I think, Elliott will still be playing at that point. Fortin's going to be there. I don't know. Yeah, you don't have any hope about Duke football, but I really don't have a whole lot of hope right now for the rest of this season for Carolina football.
Let's jump to the final topic here, which is the one that's really on everybody's mind, and we've alluded to it a little bit, is the Hurricane. Dave, in your heart of hearts, do you think UNC should play football this weekend, taking everything into consideration?
Well, I mean, everybody thinks that probably we shouldn't play in the rain on Saturday because of the Hurricane game against Virginia Tech a couple years ago or whatever. I think the real reason that we don't want to play in the rain on Saturday is because you don't want the team to ruin their Jordans, right? I mean, that's a travesty.
It would certainly, knock off the resale value.
I mean, I think personally, I think if the governor declares a state of emergency and asks people to stay off the roads, that it makes zero sense for a public university to say, hey, why don't you all come out and watch some football? I think player safety is, you know, I don't think there's a ton. I mean, I guess there's some injury risk of just running around on a wet field, but it's not, I mean, the players are on campus anyway, right? It's not this risk to get them to the stadium, but it's everybody else who has to be there. Even as like James said, with getting EMS and police and everything there, it just doesn't make sense to play a football game with a Category 4 hurricane beating down the doors.
Yeah, and as we've got some breaking news here, as we're recording, UNC is actually shutting down classes. It looks like as of Wednesday, they're going to close classes. So they may not even want students on campus. James, what do you think? Should State be playing this weekend?
No, I don't think so. And NC State, they actually did the same earlier, a couple hours earlier. They canceled classes Wednesday, I think, effective at 5 p.m. And I'm kind of along the same lines of David. I mean, if you're not even having classes and you're expecting this situation to happen, I mean, you can't – there's no reason for this game to be played. And I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think if NC State would look back on that Notre Dame game in 2016, I don't think they would want to play that game again. I mean, it was just a mess. I mean, it was a mess. It was really ended up being more dangerous than I think they probably envisioned going in when you talk about people leaving and all those things afterwards. So I don't see really a reason to play it. If the storm continues to progress the way it does, maybe you reschedule it later on. And maybe you don't. But yeah, I think safety obviously has to come first.
I think for Duke, and I'm setting myself up to get on a quick little soapbox here. But I think there's some weather concerns as well. I think we saw Miami do this last year, I believe, which was the concern about it's safer to get the team on the road away from Miami, but how do they get home and what are they coming home to? It's one of those things where, you know, Duke would be on their way to Waco before the weather hits, but would it be better to have the team here with the rest of the campus, preparing for the storm, going to wherever their families may be, to ride the storm out there from a safety reason. But I won't get into the long of it because we're trying to keep this show short. But I'm disappointed that Duke still has Baylor on the schedule from what happened there over the past, 5 or 6 years. And I know why Duke's playing the game. They're getting a nice little paycheck out of it. They're probably going to win. They need that potential of a win for bowl eligibility with the injury situation that they have. And it's a chance to go on the road and play a beatable Power Five opponent. But at the same time, it'd be nice just wants in college sports for a team to kind of take a social stand and say, you know what, we're not going to play you guys because of this is who you are. And, you know, if you don't change that, then, you know, we're not going to play you. That'd be kind of nice. But I know that's a pipe dream on my part. And I will step down off my soapbox at this point for that one. any parting shots from you guys?
Dave, can we say
parting shots? Wasn't that an ESPN thing? pardon the interruption. I guess we might get sued by those guys, but we'll get parting shots.
Hey, Ben, how about just a quick column tip? I mean, what are you guys writing about? I think you might have mentioned yours already, David. I'm not sure about you. You just want to go through maybe what we're teasing this for this week?
Yeah, I'm touching on the why fans want to but shouldn't jump off the Duke train yet this year.
And mine is penalty focused. I've decided to. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do it every week, and I'm disappointed I didn't do it in week two. But so week one I had a pie chart in my column, and then this week I'm going to have a line graph. I'm going to try to stick some graphs. I'm an accountant, so I'm going to stick some graphs and charts into my column. So I didn't do it in week two, but I've got one here in week three.
Yeah, and I expect on Friday I'm going to be writing a column about this game being canceled and you know, the potential impact it's going to have on NC State season, because I think this was a big opportunity one way or the other, you know, national exposure game against a top 20 team, and maybe how that's going to impact their season going forward.
Well, I hope we are all here next week talking about three games that got played because the storm turned out to sea and we didn't get much impact here. But first and foremost, hope both of you guys remain safe during the storm, and everybody listening to the show as well. Thanks, guys. Good show. And we will see you next week for another episode of the Tribe Artisans. I am Ben Swain for James Henderson and Dave Staley. Enjoy the weekend and stay safe.
You've been listening to the Tripartisan Podcast with Ben Swain, James Henderson, and David Staley. We hope you enjoy this show every week during the ACC football and basketball season. Our three insiders will have another installment next week on all the football and basketball happenings with Duke, NC State, and Carolina. Don't forget you can download and listen to this podcast at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or subscribe to it in iTunes and Google Play stores.